86. Lydia. The girl was alive, but only barely. If Lydia didn't help her, death would come. For her, as well as for Agrippa. She turned to look at the young man who commanded Rufina's armies. His arms were braced against the side of the boat, face twisted in pain, his eyes fixed on her face.
Help her,
he said from between clenched teeth.
I'm fine.
No, you are dying.
Your bedside manner is shit, Gertrude. Anyone ever tell you that?
She shrugged, then turned back to the girl's mother. Give her to me. I can help her. With obvious reluctance, the woman handed her the still form of the little girl. She was battered and bruised, but the cold water had done worse, her pulse so sluggish as to be non-existent. Taking a deep breath, well aware that all eyes were on her, Lydia pushed life into the child, healing her injuries and bolstering her strength even as she felt her own diminishing.
Healer,
one of the men murmured. And it was a struggle not to flinch because this revelation would put any chance they had of rescuing Malachi at risk. The child opened her eyes and began to cry, and Lydia allowed her mother to pull the girl from her arms. Do what you can to keep her warm. Then she turned back to Agrippa. His forehead was pressed against the side of the boat now, his breathing rapid. Rubbing her now age-spotted hands together in an attempt to warm them enough that she could work, Lydia took the knife that was strapped to his belt, as her own had been lost to the water. The sharp blade easily sliced through his clothing to reveal a well-muscled torso with 4 numbers tattooed in black across the backs of his shoulders. Ignoring the tattoo, she bent to examine the arrow, which was embedded just below his shoulder blade. Not bothering with a warning, she caught hold of the shaft and yanked. Agrippa screamed and thrashed, forcing Baird to drop the oars to hold him steady, but Lydia already had her hand pressed against the injury.
I know he's the enemy, she silently whispered to Hegeria, but help him anyway.
Then life flowed from her fingers, her heart fluttering as she repaired the internal damage before moving outwards, the feel of muscle and flesh knitting together beneath her palm unnerving, no matter that she'd done this 100 times or more.
Enough.
Hands closed over her shoulders, pulling her back, and she stared up at Killian. His voice was dark as he said,
If any one of you even thinks of selling her out to Rufina, I will hunt you down and your death won't be swift. Understood?
However the other travelers reacted, it must have satisfied him, because he nodded and moved to the back of the boat. Lydia turned on her hands and knees, intending to follow so that she could deal with the deep slice across his ribs. But then his eyes latched on hers.
No.
But...
I said no.
He sat on the back edge of the boat, eyes on the forest they floated past.
We've got another 2 hours until nightfall. Baird, are we going to make it to your next camp?
It's going to be tight,
the giant said, eyeing the sun, which was nothing but a faint glow through the growing cloud cover, droplets falling to splatter against his face.
And this rain is not our friend.
Can you stop it?
Baird gave a slow shake of his head.
If I meddle any more, I risk bringing worse down on our heads.
So we're going to be in for an interesting night,
Killian muttered.
The rest of you start bailing. We need speed if we are going to survive this.
But as the rain shifted to snow, a cold wind whipping down from the mountains, Lydia couldn't help but wonder if there was any chance of them surviving the night at all. They reached the camp just as the sun was setting. Everyone silently followed Killian's orders, dragging the boat to the center of the charred perimeter, the rest working to fell trees to use for the fires they'd need for tonight. Not that Lydia had any idea how they were going to get them started. The wood was soaked from rain and snow, and the oil that had been in their supplies had been lost when the boat had upturned, along with a good portion of their food. "You need to rest," Lydia snapped at Agrippa, catching him dragging a tree back to camp. "That wound is only partially healed."
"The mimics like this spot,"
was the only answer he gave, dropping the sapling and then striding back into the woods, his ruined clothing flapping around his body. Ignoring her own exhaustion, her mark was taking longer than it usually did to regather her strength. Lydia checked on the little girl, who was sitting with her mother next to the cook fire Killian had managed to get started.
"You've made a mistake coming into Darren, Gertrude,"
the mother whispered under her breath.
"I don't care how pretty that man of yours is. Leaving Mutamora was a mistake. I can't very well turn around now,"
Lydia answered, holding her hands over the flames. They ached, the pain reaching all the way up to her elbows, and she idly wondered if this was how they'd feel when she'd actually aged. If what she felt was her future, if she lived long enough to know it. The woman glanced in Agrippa's direction.
"Rufina hunts the marked,"
she whispered.
"And he's her general. If you were smart, you'd have let him die."
"We need him and Baird in order to survive this," Lydia replied, knowing her tone was flat but unable to help it. Unsure of whether saving Agrippa had been a mistake or not. Only that he'd taken that arrow for her, and that letting him die hadn't been something she was willing to do. Killian chose that moment to reappear, helping one of the other men carry a tree over to where Baird was chopping wood. Her eyes went immediately to the slice in his coat, the fabric gaping to reveal the bleeding wound beneath. He had injuries on top of injuries, and marked or not, he had limits. Climbing to her feet, she moved to intercept him before he went back into the forest.
"Let me stop the bleeding."
"No."
He moved to step around her, but she shuffled into his path. Scowling, he bent low.
"You're not recovering as swiftly as you should. It's been hours, and you still look old enough to be your own grandmother when you should be looking your normal self. Is it this place, or is it something else?"
"I don't know."
She bit down on the insides of her cheeks.
"At the very least, let me stitch it up."
"Agrippa said he'll do it once the fires are lit."
"Agrippa?" Logically, she knew that the young man would have received training to do it, but that didn't mean he was good at it. And even if he were, why would Killian choose him over her to do it? Hurt flooded through her chest, but Killian had already stepped around her and was heading back into the forest. Pulling off her spectacles, she rubbed at her stinging eyes before shoving the wire frames back over her ears. She needed to do something to keep busy, so she carried the wood Baird was chopping and set it at regularly spaced intervals around the perimeter, while others worked to get them lit. And only when the last silvered rays of the sun disappeared into dusk did Killian reappear.
"All right, let's get this done,"
Agrippa said, digging into what remained of their supplies and extracting a medical kit. Killian pulled off his shirt and coat, and Lydia clenched her teeth at the sight of the wound, which was crusted in drying blood, more seeping out to run down his sides. She watched Agrippa like a hawk as he prepared, both grateful and annoyed when he did everything as he should.
"You sure you don't want her doing this?"
he asked, but Killian only gave a sharp shake of his head, lying down next to the fire.
"Need something to bite down on? Quit stalling and get it done,"
Killian snapped.
"I have a bad feeling about tonight."
Agrippa's brow furrowed, and he glanced toward the dark woods through the smoke and steam of the fires. Then he set to cleaning the wound, focus entirely on his work. Lydia's hands balled into fists, and she forced herself to look away, asking the children's father, who was putting together dinner from what remained of their supplies, if he needed help. But all he said was,
"You've done enough, Marked One. Rest by the fire."
The camp, which had already felt too small, all of a sudden felt like a prison, and Lydia fought the urge to pace the perimeter like a caged animal in a circus fair. Sitting on a rock, she held her hands out to the flames, willing them to return to youth, hating this sudden loss of strength. Was it being in Darren? Or was it her? The question circled her head as a plate of food was placed in her hand, as she mechanically spooned the tasteless porridge into her mouth. The life shed by those around her drifted toward her, the skin of her hands slowly smoothing. But she wanted it to happen faster. Wanted to take it. She recoiled from the thought, right as Agrippa said,
"I'd say try to take it easy, but there's little chance of that." "Thank you."
Killian sat up, pulling his shirt over his head and accepting the plate handed to him, staring blindly into the fire as he shoved the food into his mouth. "Why are you acting like this?" She wanted to scream, but it wasn't a conversation that she could or would have with all these people listening in. She was torn between wanting to flee this situation and wanting to stay, between anger and distress, and why wasn't her mark working? Then there was a rustle in the trees. The sound of something, no, many somethings, circling the camp.
"Good evening, you little bastards,"
Agrippa called.
"You couldn't wait to see me until after I finished eating?"
Uneasiness filled Lydia's chest, and her eyes flicked to Killian. His spoon was halfway between the plate and his mouth. Then slowly, he set both on the ground, his eyes fixed on the darkness. Tension seeped off the group as they waited to see what the mimics would do, who they would target, what secrets they would reveal.
"What sort of father stays in a boat while his child is drowning?"
The mother's voice snarled.
"What sort of father clings to safety while a stranger saves his little girl?"
The father in question turned to stare at his wife.
"It wasn't me," she whispered. "I said not a word."
"It's the mimics,"
Agrippa scowled.
"Ignore them. And if you can't ignore them, muffle your ears so you can't hear them."
"Coward!"
the mimic shrieked.
"You've always been a coward. Would that it had been you who drowned so I might find my children someone better. A real man. Like Agrippa."
The father blanched, even as Agrippa let out a belabored sigh.
"Ignore them, you twit. They're only trying to rile you up. And if it eases your mind, I'm really not interested."
Except rather than being pacified, the man pointed a finger at the ex-legionnaire.
"You said they took the thoughts from our minds, that they didn't make things up."
Then he rounded on his wife.
"Which means they might be saying it, but you're the one thinking it."
"I'm not." Her eyes were wide. "They speak false."
"I always knew you were unfaithful,"
a mimic hissed in the father's voice.
"Ungrateful little chit. The only reason I married you was because you were pregnant, and this is how you repay me?"
The woman's shock turned to fury.
"I have never once even looked at another man, you pig! How dare you?"
In a heartbeat, the pair devolved into a shouting match, half their words from their lips and the others from the mimics until it became nearly impossible to tell who was saying what.
"Enough!"
Agrippa shouted, stepping between them and pulling them apart.
"Will you two calm yourselves?"
Another mimic added fuel to the fire, saying in Agrippa's voice,
I had her half a dozen times before we left Dead Ground, and every time we had a good laugh about you.
Why, you little!
The father swung his fist at Agrippa, who caught his wrist and twisted, sending the other man face first into the ground. But then the mother flung herself at him, screaming curses even as the mimics chattered in the voices of all three. Killian and Baird dived into the fray, pulling everyone apart even as Lydia scrambled to the children.
They are all just upset, she whispered, wrapping fabric around their heads to hold pads against their ears, the tears on their faces making her chest tighten. She pulled them against her so they couldn't see, and only then looked up and saw the couple weren't the only people the creatures were going after. The rest of the group were all standing at various points around the perimeter, eyes wide as they listened to whatever the mimics were saying, the noise of voices deafening. Then one man stepped between a space in the fires.
No!
She shouted, letting go of the children and running after him. Through the smoke, she saw him fall, saw the splatter of blood even as she heard his screams, and Lydia lunged between the flames, catching hold of his wrist. She tried to haul him back, but the mimics had hold of him, and instead she was dragged between the stacks of burning wood, barely feeling the heat. Then hands closed on her ankles, jerking her to safety. The man came with her, but only half of him. Gagging, Lydia fell back against Killian, staring first at the dead man's sightless eyes, then the ruined mess of flesh at the bottom of his torso. His legs were gone.
How many are out there?
Killian asked in a low voice, and she tore her eyes from the corpse to look beyond the fire, seeing the life surround the mimic's forms.
Dozens.
Another of the group ran screaming into the trees, shouting,
I'm coming! I'm coming!
Everyone needs to calm down!
Agrippa hollered, but it was to no avail. The camp was in chaos, everyone fighting with one another as the mimics riled frayed tempers and exploited fears. The couple were tied up, but there was no more rope. Agrippa and Baird struggled to restrain people, Killian going to their aid. But they couldn't hold down everyone, and the other travelers flung themselves at them, attacking. And the sun had only just set. Lydia's mind raced. Then a solution occurred to her, but it was one not without risks. Picking up a burning branch, she tossed it outside the perimeter, driving the mimics back. Then she took a deep breath and ran between the fires, snatching up an armload of needled deadfall from the shadows and then stumbling back inside the ring. No one had noticed her go, the mimics' volume growing by the second. So no one noticed when she went to the cook fire at the center of camp and dropped the branches on the flames, a great cloud of smoke filling the air. Hurrying to the edge of the perimeter, she sucked in a deep breath and then pressed her face to the ground, watching as the group unwittingly inhaled the smoke. Slowly, they stopped fighting, looking around in confusion, only Agrippa seeming to realize what she'd done. Holding his breath, he raced in her direction, then stumbled and fell to the ground, unconscious. Everyone else dropped to the ground, and Killian fell to his knees. His eyes locked on hers as he gasped,
"Keep the perimeter fires lit!"
Then he swayed and fell on his side. The need to breathe was becoming nearly painful, but Lydia kept holding her last clean breath of air in her lungs. She stumbled over to the fire and tossed water on the flames. Gouts of smoke and steam rose into the air, but the flames still flickered, so she threw dirt on the fire. Only when she couldn't take it anymore did she race back to the perimeter and suck in a deep, mouthful of air. Though it was much dissipated, she still tasted the acrid smoke of the nettles, and a wave of dizziness swept over her. "Stay conscious," she silently pleaded. "Otherwise, we are all dead." On hands and knees, she crawled around the perimeter, adding fuel to the fires in case she succumbed. Only then did she check the others, going to Killian first. His pulse was strong, and she prayed he'd be the first to wake because she didn't think she'd get away with this trick twice. Only once she was certain everyone was all right did she sit next to the children, lending them her body heat against the mounting cold. Through all of this, the mimics had been quiet. She prayed the smoke had knocked them out too. But even as the thought crossed her mind, she heard a voice. Unfamiliar and yet not.
"What a strike of fortune, the Calorian boy being marked,"
a man said, then laughed.
"The gods favor our girl. There can be no doubt. Once the boy has sworn himself to her, I'll speak to Liam about a betrothal. It's a good match. We'll please the people."
Liam was Killian's father's name. Lydia shook her head in confusion, her eyes going to Killian, but he still slept. Were the mimics stealing from inside his head even now?
"Kitaria is not yet three, Derek," a woman said softly. "Wait until she's older, until we see if she favors his company or not before rushing into these things. We've time."
A child babbled in the distance, the words unclear to Lydia, but she heard the click, click of heels. Then the woman said,
"Let me help you, love."
And she abruptly could see the scene playing out before her. A woman's face, hazy, looking down at her, and beyond, a tall man in a green coat, his face equally blurred. He said,
"Best hope she favors him, for he'll be at her side the whole of their lives."
The woman laughed, and Lydia felt a strange sensation of being lifted, of being carried, and she gave her head a sharp shake.
"He's not a boy to be led anywhere he does not wish to go. His parents can scarce keep him seated through a lesson without him escaping off into the wilds."
"He'll settle."
"I don't think so, so best hope he favors our girl as well."
A loud bang echoed through the night, and Lydia jumped, trying to pull her head from the fog. But it was impossible.
"What is the meaning of this, Cinta?"
the man snarled.
"You've no business being in here."
"Which is strange, given this was my bed for more than a decade, Your Grace."
A new voice purred the words, a younger version of Cinta's voice.
"Rufina, whose mind were the mimics taking this from?"
There was no time to dwell on the question, because Rufina was speaking again.
"My bed, until you cast me aside for her."
"Get out!"
the man shouted, his anger palpable, and Lydia tried to see, but her vision was obscured by the woman's body. But she heard the gasp, heard the man say,
"Gods, your eyes!"
A flurry of movement, then,
"Guards!"
"All dead, I'm afraid,"
Rufina answered.
"Revenge is a thing best savored, and I could risk no interruptions."
"Camilla, run!"
the man shouted, and then steel rang against steel.
"Run!"
The woman sobbed, but then she was running, and Lydia realized with a start she was seeing through the eyes of the child that was wailing in terror for her father.
"Run, run, run," Rufina sang from behind. "There is no escape."
Terror filled Lydia, her body turning to ice, and she muttered,
"It's not real, it's not real, it's not real."
But it felt real, as though she were truly the child in the woman's arms. Father dead and the murderer chasing them through the hallway and into other rooms. Nowhere to go and no time to hide.
Would you like to die first, or wait as I strip the life from your girl?
Rufina called, her voice closer.
You will not touch her!
The woman screamed.
You will not have her!
A door latch clicked, and Lydia stared out over the ocean before being turned back to face Rufina, who prowled closer, eyes midnight and flame.
You stole my life, Rufina hissed. You took everything that was supposed to be mine.
It was never yours, the woman said, her voice steady as she backed up, climbed on a balustrade. And it never will be.
You'll kill her yourself instead, Rufina laughed. How noble of you!
I will save her.
There's nowhere to go. Nowhere that I won't find you.
Yes, there is,
the woman answered. And then Lydia was falling. She screamed, grasping at the air around her, wind whistling in her ears, a hand closing over her mouth just before they struck. Cold, frigid water surrounded her, everything black and disorienting.
Hold on, love. Please, hold on.
They were flung forward, and Lydia sobbed as something scraped along her leg, tears flooding down her face to join the seawater. She was dragged onto rock, then up again in the woman's arms, and they moved through total darkness.
Shh, love.
The woman whispered.
They must not hear us.
Voices and thundering boots reverberated through the dark tunnels beneath the palace, growing light coming toward them. But the woman turned away and into another tunnel. More darkness, the only sounds the woman's feet shuffling over rock and the child's muffled sobs. And then a glow filled her eyes. A crystal? Xenthier stem appearing, illuminating the blackness. Holding tight to the child, the woman reached out and touched it. White light. Lydia wept as the light cleared. The sounds and visions fractured and strange, but also painfully familiar. She knew where the woman and the child had escaped to. The woman was faltering, falling over and over, each time struggling harder to rise.
Walk, my love,
she finally whispered.
We are so close. Here, she cannot harm you. Here, you will be safe.
The remembered scent of flowers filled Lydia's nose. The drone of insects in the foliage and distant sound of waves crashing in her ears. Higher they climbed, and she was so tired, so afraid. Then the woman fell. Lydia pulled on her arm, pleading at her to get up, but the woman's eyelids only fluttered, so she started to scream. A clang of a gate and voices speaking over top of her, shouting, "Get the senator!" And then a man was kneeling next to her and the woman. Her father, but not the father she'd left behind. And the woman caught his wrist, speaking in cell.
Care for her, Appius.
Keep her safe. Where is the physician?
Lydia's father shouted, and she saw the tears on his face.
Get someone! Knock on every door!
It's too late,
the woman whispered.
Her name is Princess Kitaria Felorn. Tell her that her mother loved her.
And then the spark faded from her eyes and she went still.
Mother!
Lydia screamed, grabbing at her body, hands coming away covered in blood.
Mother!
And then hands were shaking her. Agrippa's face inches from hers.
Gertrude!
He shouted. Snap out of it! It's only the mimics playing with your head! Only it wasn't the mimics. It was real. It was her memory.
Let her go!
Killian shoved Agrippa away and knelt before her, still swaying from the effect of the smoke.
Are you all right?
All the connections clicked in her head. 1,000 realizations, and an awful mix of grief and bitterness and loss welled up in her chest.
I know who I am, she thought, staring into his eyes.
But all she said was, dawn will come soon enough. Everyone should get some rest.